content, you could have user blogs, which are Telegraph and various other newspapers are doing. So I could go on and on and on, really. But yeah, does that answer your question? In terms of what actually works, there's a number of pieces of research around community. There's one particular piece of research, I'm trying to think what this is now, the user engagement study by Northwestern University. They did a survey into what people liked about websites, what they particularly wanted. And you see running through this the theme of community and engagement. So people wanted website publishers to care about visitors. They wanted a sense of community. And if you think about the web, the web is all kinds of things. It's a platform, it's a tool, it's a channel, whatever. But one of the things is it's a space where you gather with other people, either at the same time or asynchronously at different times. So that sense of community is quite important. Interactivity is important, which I'll talk about in future weeks. So the ability to interact with not just the content, but the people who are on that site as well. So interactivity isn't just you interacting with the journalists, but with other readers and with the material, the content itself, the information itself. Perspectives come through as important. Rather than the single perspective of the journalist or the publisher, but actually the conversation that takes place in the comments thread or the forum, that access to different perspectives, people who have personal experience of an issue, people who are experts on an issue, people who are just very opinionated, that comes through as important. And it goes on. You know, I'm as interested in input from other users as I am in the regular content on this site. As journalists, we really have an exaggerated sense of our own importance, you know, in terms of our content and how wonderful it is. But actually, you know, in a lot of research it comes through that people are interested in other people as much as our godlike pronouncements from on high. And that can be a case of an existing, of kind of reinforcing an existing community, so people that you already know, but you maintain contact through particular web pages, websites, or it might be creating new connections, making new acquaintances. So that's the kind of why, which is always the most important question to ask as a journalist. The next question is, well, how do you do this? How do you identify and serve communities? The first thing is to actually know what a community is. As publishers, we're used to talking about markets, which is a different thing entirely. You can have a market, so the Birmingham Mail's market, its audience, is people who live in Birmingham and the West Midlands, probably kind of CDE demographic. Okay, so middle class, working class. The Birmingham Post would be professionals in central Birmingham, probably ABC, so the more affluent readers, but fewer of them. That's a market, it's not a community. You don't go around saying, I'm part of the CDE Birmingham community. You might be part of Birmingham's creative community, or the Asian community, or the community in Birchfield. You might be part of a community of gardeners, or students, or whatever. That's a very different thing, and that's something that you need to identify when you think about this and think about the community that you're serving. The internet allows us to target much more specific niches and works much better with niches of community. Partly because of the way that people consume content online through search and through social networks. So they'll be searching for what's happening in my postcode. You know, they don't search for Birmingham news, they search for Birchfield events or something like that. So, geographic areas are the obvious thing. That's what newspaper publishers are used to, but quite specific ones. Demographic groups are what you might be familiar with from magazines. So, Mumsnet is a classic example. That is a very successful online publishing operation aimed at mums. Okay, pet owners, people who skateboard, people who like heavy metal music. It might be a community around a theme, something that isn't necessarily a community that someone's part of for a long period of time. So students is a good example. Yeah, you're only students for so long, and after that you'll join a different community. And you might still be in touch with people from the student community because you've all become part of the television production community or the media community or whatever. But some of you might move into other communities. You might become part of the voluntary sector community. Weddings are a good example of this. You know, it's something that people get involved in, but for a short period of time. And if you work in magazine publishing, you know these kinds of magazines, wedding magazines, you know that your people who buy that magazine are constantly changing. You don't have people who buy wedding magazines for 10 years, by and large. You know, you might have some very optimistic people. And sometimes you get communities around individuals. And again, this is something that I think is overemphasised in publishing, but it's worth identifying. And we've got communities of cause have been identified, communities of problems, which weddings are kind of a bit like that. Communities of common enemies, things like that. One of the arguments in terms of why the American blogosphere was so healthy, say 5 years ago, was because of George Bush. Yeah, because he was a common enemy, and people felt so passionately about him that they set up blogs. And you didn't have that in the UK. Also, the American media, you know. And likewise, you're getting now communities of kind of on the right in America, very vocal online because they're pissed off about Obama or whatever.
The Tea Party and stuff.
Yeah. So communities, you know, a big enemy can be quite a powerful motivation in terms of people forming communities. This is the conversation prism, which was created by a guy called Brian Solis, which is a really good way of mapping out where your communities might be. Okay. So we talk a lot about blogs, and you've got WordPress and Blogger and Typepad and things like that. Talk a lot about social networks, which is somewhere here. Facebook, Bebo, MySpace. You've got micro-blogging communities like Twitter. But then you've got other things as well, like niche networks. So LinkedIn is a professional social network. You've got Ning, which is a Bourgeois social networking tool. So you can have a social network of bikers or whatever. Customer service networks like Yelp, location, social networks like Brightkite and Foursquare is a classic example, people who are in a particular location, video, social networks, document sharing sites, events, music, so Last.fm is a good place for certain communities, wikis, picture, photo sharing. Found out some fantastic stuff about Flickr communities and local government this week, which I may mention. Social bookmarking as well, which I'll cover this afternoon. So communities exist across all kinds of platforms online. Forums are often ignored, but they're hugely healthy forums. Sheffield Forum has got about 1 million or 2 million regular users. Enormous social, enormous community. So, if you Google conversation prism, you'll bring up this image. And this is, I think this is quite a good place to start when you're thinking about it. Once you've identified your community, go around this prism and think, does this community have a presence on Flickr? or photo sharing websites? Does it have a presence on forums? Does it have a presence on Facebook and so on? Also, all of the websites that I'm referring to this morning are, you can get them on delicious.com, I'll put the link up at the end, delicious.com/PaulB/OJ70102. Okay, so that's all the links that I refer to in this class or anything relevant. So that that video you can watch in full, that's the top link there. But like I say, I'll put that link up at the end. And before I go on to that in a bit more detail, I also think that when we look at what we do as journalists in a networked age, an age when people can connect to each other without us and get and publish information and so on, I think there are certain kind of principles of journalism that become particularly important. So publishing, I think, becomes less important in and of itself. Verifying and contextualising what is already online becomes more important. There's a lot of information out there, so that the demand is to actually contextualise that and verify it. The other thing is to digitise and make findable what's not online, because then it's not findable. And this is something, I went to an event on Wednesday of hyperlocal bloggers and local government people and open data people. And there was a session about bloggers and local government. And what came through really strongly, in fact I blogged about this last night on podmosh.com, what came through really strongly was that hyperlocal bloggers saw their role as making information findable to their community. So council websites are rubbish at telling you when the next council meeting is or what's being planned in your area. And bloggers saw their role to take that information and make it much easier to find that community. But the final thing which is relevant to what I'm talking about this morning is to empower communities and make connections between them. So one of the things with communities is online is you get this, people talk about echo chambers and isolated communities and people just talking to themselves. So one of the things that journalists have always been extremely good at is having a broad view and having feet in various camps and knowing who the union rep is and knowing who the chief executive is and being able to kind of conduct a conversation between those two camps. And that is just as important online as well. But because the web is a tool as well as a platform, empowering communities is important as well. So it's not just about telling them what's happening, but allowing them to interrogate that information, to comment on it, to make connections between it, and so on. Giving them a platform to do that. So Flickr, or Facebook actually is a great, Facebook, for me, is one of the primary news tools of the 21st century. It allows you to, first of all, know what your friends are doing. That's an extremely personalised news service. Second of all, it allows you to share information with your friends, share photos, share videos, and so on. So that's empowering you as a community to do things. So that's another reason why I think community is really important. So let's run through some of them. Some of these tools. This is from a community's cookbook. One of the things that works a lot around blogging, and I'll talk more about blogging in future weeks, is you write differently on a blog. You write in a way that encourages participation. You pose questions. You ask for contributions. You solicit content. You link to other blogs, and in return people know about you and link back to you as conversations take place between sites. So a piece of journalism, if you like, might start on your blog, but then someone else picks it up and adds something to it and links to you to what you said, and then you link back to what they said and add something more, and so it goes on. Or it takes place in the comments. Or it takes place across Twitter. You've got image groups. A number of news organisations have very successfully used platforms like Flickr to engage with users. This is Sarah Hartley, who's now overseas for the local project. What she did to begin with, which is really key, is she started off by sharing some images of their own. She didn't just go into Flickr and say, give me your images, because we are the Manchester Evening News and you are very lucky we're paying any attention to you. What she did was start something rolling, start the ball rolling, give something to that community, and then people contributed back in kind. And as a result, we've benefited from photos of major events and just good images of the city, which they've used in print and online. The Birmingham Mail Hyperlocal project that I mentioned, one of the first things they did was take Birmingham Mail photos, put them on Flickr under a Creative Commons license that said you can use this if you want for non-commercial purposes. That's a significant gesture. One of the things that came out on Wednesday at this local government thing was people saying to Walsall Council and Stoke Council, if you put your photos on Flickr, that will generate a lot of goodwill if you change your licence so that we can use them. So that's image sharing. Then you've got social networks. A number of news organisations have set up their own. So you can have a profile on MyTelegraph and a blog on there and so on. But I think it's much more cost effective to see if a group already exists online and become a part of that, become an active contributor to that group. The Birmingham Post, or even just set one up on a third party like Facebook or LinkedIn. The Birmingham Post set one up on LinkedIn. The BBC have Your Say team set up channels on Quick, which is a video conversation website, 12 Seconds, which is now defunct, closed down recently, and Seismic. You've got Flickr groups, YouTube channels. But the other thing might be to say, actually, there's a really healthy forum here, and we're just going to become a valuable member of that, because you're not going to expect a big community to just move over to your Facebook group. There's a thing called Dunbar's number, which is often cited in community management, which comes from some research by a guy called Robert Dunbar, who looked at he started looking at communities of chimpanzees, I think it was, and how they related to each other. And basically, he came up with this figure of 150 people, which is quite often misrepresented. But the idea was that to sustain meaningful relationships with people, there's only a limit to the number of people you can sustain a meaningful relationship with. Above that point, you start to have structures in place and bureaucracy and all the rest of it. And the larger the group, the more time individuals devote to grooming, not in the online sense, but grooming each other. And a good analogy of grooming is when you send a text message to someone or a tweet or something on Facebook, you're just maintaining that relationship. Yeah, you might even be, there's research to suggest you're keeping that person at a distance for the moment. But it just maintains that relationship. And actually the web makes it easier for us to do that. We can just, follow someone on Twitter and occasionally just tweet them to say, I'm still here, I'm still interested in what you're doing. I might be very busy, but I still care, kind of thing. So, but the point of this is that if your group becomes too large, does it start to break up into smaller groups then that can still maintain that cohesion? Can we actually sustain the size of markets that we've had in broadcast and print media online? Or is it better to have lots of smaller groups? And experience suggests this is why niches work very well, it's perfectly possible to have lots of smaller groups rather than one huge amorphous mass. The other piece of research which is really important in this area is Jacob Nielsen's law of participation inequality. Jacob Nielsen, who is a real expert on the web and web design and various other things, does lots of research in this area. It's well worth reading. He's written a number of books. He looked at how many people contributed to particular online communities and basically found a very consistent pattern, which was that in any given community, 90% of people are lurkers. They read, but they don't contribute. So they might go to a forum, read what people are saying, but don't contribute themselves. Or they might visit a Wikipedia page and read it, but don't make an edit. Okay. 9% of people are occasional, might contribute a little, say one edit, or one or two posts on a forum. 1% of users, however, account for almost all of the action. Okay? So in a community of, say, let's say you've got a forum with 2,000 users, 20 of those users are going to be doing, say, 90% of the activity. They're going to be very prolific, very active. Another 180 will be contributing occasionally, and the other, let me get this right, 1,800 are just reading. And that's, you know, that's perfectly reasonable, because most of the traffic, most of the people passing through these pages will not be members of those communities. They'll be doing searches for something and will just be passing by. The community is actually about 10% of contributors, and then you've got the 1% who are leading it. You want to be, first of all, you want to attract that 1% that's going to drive your community, and second of all, you probably will have to be the 1% yourself to begin with. Yeah? And if you join in an existing community, you want to become part of that 1% that is valued, that has reputation and trust. This is another way of looking at the same sort of issue. This is from some research by Charlene Lee, who looked at types of participation. And she found that you had different types of participation. You had spectators, so these are the lurkers. You had joiners, so people who might sign up to Facebook, for example, but not necessarily do much. You have collectors, so these are people who are bookmarking things on Delicious and so on. Critics are people who review things, and creators are people who upload video and images and things like that. And she found that broadly, this is the proportion of people who fell into those categories. So again, if you're working with online communities, think about what kind of activity you're expecting people to do. Are you expecting them to collect things for you, like useful links, or to write reviews, or to upload images and video? A really, really useful way of approaching this, I found, is something that I think it was Forrester came up with, someone at Forrester did, which is called the post process for social media strategy. Put another way, technology is a tool, it's not a strategy. Okay? So you should never start by saying, I want to create a Facebook group for this, or I want to do something with Flickr. That's a tool, it's not the way to achieve something. The first thing you should start with is, who are the people that I am serving or targeting or whatever? Okay, so if your people are people who are getting married, or people who are the elderly, who have an interest in local history, right, that's what you start with. The next thing is, what's your objective? Well, I want to provide a space for these people to talk about their experiences, or I want them to be able to talk to each other. Right, well, how are you going to do that? What's your strategy? well, I need to create a space where these people can talk to each other, or I need to make it possible for them to upload images or whatever. Right, now, what's the technology? Well, Flickr will allow me to do that, or Twitter's going to suit this, or these people are already on Facebook, so that's going to work. Yeah?
Was that inactive in the previous one? Inactive 52%?
It's nothing to do with the last thing. Mm. This is basically what you are doing in planning. Mm. So, are you talking about that one? Yeah, I think the only way that this relates is do you want people to be creating or reviewing or collecting or something like that? Does that make sense? So whenever I kind of draw any kind of project in this kind of area, this is how I approach it. In July, I was asked to do a social media strategy for a book publisher. And, you know, quite often what people would do is say, we want a Facebook group for our book, or we want a Flickr group for our newspaper, or whatever. That's upside down. That's starting with the technology. What you should do to begin with is recruit people. Okay, well, it's a science book, so it's going to be people who are interested in popular science. It might be scientists themselves. It might be people who are buying a book for their dad or mum for Christmas because their dad or mum's interested in popular science. Well, what do we want to do? Right. And you go through it. And in the end, I think I identified four groups of people, one of whom the technology was Amazon. Okay, so it was going on Amazon and making sure that that book was linked to other books, for example. Another group had blogs, so it was doing things on blogs. So as you look at the communities that you're looking to serve for your project, this half of the room, you should be mapping out this process. Who are the people? What do you want to do with them? How are you going to do it? And then what are the tools that are going to allow you to do them? You will effectively be community managers. And this is a really expanding area of employment across television, across publishing, and lots of other areas as well. And there's quite a bit of literature on this which I can recommend. I'm going to give you a handout as well from a book on Wikipedia, for example. There's a lot of lessons to be learned here. But one of the lessons is that you need to always be in that community and setting a good example. And one analogy I use is being a combination of the perfect party host and the perfect party guest. So as a party host, you're providing a venue, you're providing drinks, and, you know, everything that people want and need, and you're gathering the right people together. But that's not enough. You have to be a guest as well. So you're moving around, you're having conversations, you're setting the standard of behaviour. If you just leave the room, then what are people going to do? Eventually. One of two things.
Leave as well.
Sorry?
Leave as well.
Leave is one, yeah. What's the other thing we're going to do? Possibly before we leave. Sorry?
Run rampant.
Yeah, trash the place. And you see this on comment threads and forums and all kinds of areas where the owners have just left it. Okay. It basically the decent people start to leave when things get nasty, so it gets nastier and nastier until everyone's gone.
Do you think there's a certain life expectancy for those sort of communities? Because, I mean, I've noticed on, say, comic book forums, there are certain figures in the community that will stay on a board for a year or so, and they'll, you know, favour all change, and they'll go over to, I don't know, comic book resources instead of Newsarama, and then they'll get bored of comic book resources and they'll go over to Comic Block or so on and so on. So, do you think like the community's atrophy after a time, like regardless of what you do? Or would that depend on the subject matter or the community?
I think what happens is quite often the early adopters who set the pace in those communities then find something else that they adopt which does it better. And I mean, I don't know how long that will last in terms of how many other things, but you certainly had, for example, mailing lists that became depopulated because those people moved on to blogs, and then those people moved on to Facebook groups, and then on to wikis, or you know, and depending on what that community needed, they would, you know, the community moved on and they followed those leaders, and that's partly because the people maintain the tools might not have adapted, you know, or it might simply be because that's the best thing to do. And then you get the opposite. There's a classic example of a Buffy, the Vampire Slayer community, and they had it was the official kind of forum run by Fox, is it?
It was WB to start with. No, it was aired on WB, it was made by Fox, and it went over to something else for season 6 and 7.
Okay, it might have been Fox who created this forum. Anyway, whoever it was, they decided to revamp this forum, and they built a completely new forum, and everyone on the forum, the original forum, the community, hated it. It had all these fantastic new features and functionality, but the people, the community, just wanted their old fashioned simple forum. So much so they left, they raised enough money between them to get to pay a programmer to build a copy of how it used to be. Right? Which is a classic example of the community, the kind of forum owners, not consulting with the community about what they wanted. They just thought, let's do something flashy. So that kind of engagement and membership is really key. You need clear policies in your group, but also invite your users to be part of the building of those policies. I'll share this presentation with you all, by the way. You need to be active in recruiting people. When people join, you need to welcome them. The other thing is actually providing a range of ways to participate. Some people will want to contribute by text, some people will want to upload images, some people will want to vote. You know, people have different ways of participating, and the more different ways that they can participate in the community, and this is a community, not a place, then the more flexible it's going to be, the more diverse your membership. So your community might exist across blogs, Flickr, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever. And depending on how they prefer to communicate, they will use different tools. So some of them will be most comfortable with using images. Some of them just want to vote things up and down. Highlighting good practice and rewarding it is a common technique. In some areas, people are rewarded through having additional powers. So on Wikipedia, if you are a valuable contributor, then they'll give you admin rights, which means that you have certain powers to approve other contributions. On several forums, you'll have kind of status, so that what you publish is always automatically published, or it's highlighted or whatever. The Guardian have a very complex rating system for their communities, for contributors, which if people are doing bad things, for example, then after a while they get put in this kind of sin bin where everything they post has to be pre-moderated, has to be approved before it's published, and so on. And anticipating those kinds of problems is really key as well. So what do we do when someone starts just saying racist things? what do we do when someone starts arguments for argument's sake, what's called trolling? What's their policy about that? And having, this is where having clear policies comes in useful, because you can say, I'm not just picking on you, this is the policy, this is what you're breaking, this is what we do if you break that policy, this is what we do if you use racist language, this is what we do if you're just being an arsehole. What's really key is meeting people in person, if you can. There was a person called Jo Geary who worked for the Birmingham Post a couple of years ago. She now works for the Times. One of the things that she established was, similar to the recent project, she brought bloggers, local bloggers, into Birmingham Post websites, and they had their own space in the Birmingham Post website. But she didn't just email them and kind of assume that they would be flattered. She went out and did a lot of meetings. She attended events. She started the social media cafe that most of you have been to. So she started that as a space for people to get together. She went to the Birmingham Bloggers Meet, which is taking place, takes place every month, which takes place next week. She made those connections. She built those relationships. It's really, really important. You know, it really does make a massive difference if you've met someone in person. And quite often you'll find that meeting people online generates a demand for an opportunity to actually meet in person, which can actually be a commercial opportunity, events, you know, things like that. I guess the key thing is, and this is really going where the user is to, you know, just get out there, make these contacts, don't expect people to come to you, find out where the community is, engage in that, contribute to it. Okay. One of the things about publishing is that effectively the business model for publishing and for broadcasting was to say, we gather a particular group of people in one space and then we sell advertising against that space. That's what the offering was to advertisers. You know, this is the only place where you can reach people in Birmingham, a huge number of people in Birmingham. This is the only place you can reach people who are planning a wedding in our wedding magazine. And online it's a similar kind of thing, but actually there's a lot more that you can do other than advertising. So you can sell merchandise where people kind of demonstrate their membership of that community. You can offer additional features. So Flickr, for example, Flickr's business model is to say, if you want to have more than 200 photos, if you want to be able to do various things with them, then you pay us 20 quid a month. One of the really interesting things, and I'll see if it's somewhere there. Can't actually, but one of the really interesting things is you can be a broker in that community. So you can offer a tool. A good example is Spreadshirts. Is it Spreadshirts? Where you can design your own t-shirts and sell them online. But there's a community of people who design t-shirts on there, and they buy from each other. And what basically that website does is provide the tools for that community to do what it wants to do, and it takes a cut of that exchange. It's like basically having a market. You set up a market, you allow people to sell, and you just pay a rent for having a stall or a car boot sale. Yeah, so you can do that with virtual communities if you're providing tools and services and an ability for people to gather together. So when you're looking at the enterprise side of things, think about these possible opportunities around making communities sustainable. So, just to finish up, in terms of the formal part of this morning, you need to start doing it. You need to become part of a community, or think about a community that you're already part of. and look critically at how that community works. Look at the dynamics. Who are the 1% of alpha contributors? Who are the 9%? What are the values and norms of that community? What is acceptable behaviour? What is unacceptable? How are those standards set? How do you know that swearing isn't acceptable in this forum, but it's positively demanded over here? Yeah? How did you figure that out? You know, when, how many of you are on Twitter? Hopefully, all of you now. So you should all be on Twitter. One of the things that when you start on Twitter is there are certain norms and values on Twitter, certain acceptable ways of communicating. One thing you don't do on Twitter is just shout to everyone. Yeah? Or spam everyone. So all those kinds of things. And then, so engaging communities, think critically about them. In terms of your publishing project or your broadcasting project, try and become an active contributor in the community that you're trying to serve or that is part of your project. Okay? Because you need to build up those relationships to be able to work with these people. And the second thing is use that post strategy. Is think about who are the people, what are my objectives, what's the strategy, and what is the technology. Don't let the technology drive what you do. It should be a tool that serves who you want to reach and how you want to reach them. And there's tons of stuff on community strategy. If you go to delicious.com/polby/community, that has all of my bookmarks around community. There's a book by Gal, well, there's two books by someone called Axel Bruns, both of which I recommend.
So Axel like Rose or
Axel as in Axel Foley.
Right.
Or Axel F on Beverly Hills Cop. AXEL. I always thought that was a cool name. Lee is
Christine Lee.
Sorry?
Christine Lee?
No. It's been a book now. Anyway, he wrote a book called The Wikipedia Revolution. Andrew Lee. Actually, it's L-I-H, so maybe that is Christine Lee. So Andrew Lee wrote a book called The Wikipedia Revolution, which I'm going to give you a chapter from that. And Connor is Angela Connor, who is a very experienced community manager, who's written an e-book. Just search for Angela Connor Community on Amazon, you'll find her book. As I said, the bookmarks specifically for this week are OJ70102, so delicious.com/polby/OJ70102. And while I'm at it, I'll bookmark this. And when it comes to community, should we do this in a minute? Yeah, we'll take a 5-10 minute break and then we'll come back to this. But if you open up Google Reader and go to onlinejournalismblog.com, I've done you a whole bunch of feeds, and the first five are about community. So you want to subscribe to blogs and websites that cover community management, and there's five that I would recommend as well. But we'll come to that after the break. Any questions before we break?
I did not understand the point of go offline.
What's the point of go offline?
Yeah.
Basically, if you physically meet people, build much stronger relationships. And if you, beyond that, if you provide a way for people to meet, if you organise events and say, let's all get together, that's even better because then you're positively contribute to that movement and help them do that. Yeah. Any questions?
No.
Right, I'll see you back in about 5-10 minutes.